Well, this is Current Yield, Grant's Interest Rate Observer of the Air. I am Jim Grant. With me, as always, is Henry French, who runs the engineering department here at the Current Yield podcast, and the great deputy editor of Grant's, Evan Lorenz, and a new voice today, someone who is not 77 years old, not, what do you, Evan?
You're 42.
Oh, for Pete's sake. James Robertson Jr. Say hello, James.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. James's voice has changed, not, you know, recently, the past 8 or 9 years, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, James is the first vice president in charge of, among other things, certain complex debt structures, which we will go into a little more detail presently, speaking with John Kirshner, who is an authority on that topic, and he works with Janus out in Denver. But Evan, so you've heard the phrase political economy?
Yeah, it rings a bell.
Have you ever heard it in the context of equity valuations?
Not so much.
But how do you otherwise explain the levitation of the shares in a security with tickers, I think, J...
DJT, I think it was. Yeah, it's shooting up like it's a cryptocurrency. The Donald Trump, what is the full name of the company?
Something about truth.
Well, the truth is it doesn't make much revenue. It, according to the FT, it earned $3.4 million in revenue last year, and it lost $49 million in income.
Well, $3.4 billion isn't so bad.
A million with an M.
Oh, million.
You know, its valuation, though, is the billion part. It's $9.3 billion as we're talking right now.
$9.3 billion on revenues of $3.4 million.
Yeah, to be fair, though, that was only for the first 9 months of last year. They could have had a bang out fourth quarter.
That's the kind of market, right? There are all these strange pockets of shall we call it, Twilight Zone caliber discontinuity with the precepts enunciated by Benjamin Graham and David L. Dodd in the book called Security Analysis.
In favor of the latest DJT ticker, and I believe the last one went bankrupt a decade or two ago?
More than that, yeah. We wrote about that. Grant's did in 1987.
And we're right then.
Yeah.
Well, in favor of this one, it is at least generating revenue, unlike some cryptocurrencies and non-fungible tokens.
Yeah. All right. So enough complaints about the world of non-interest-bearing paper.
Fungible shares.
Yeah, right. Okay. So let's get down to business, ladies and gentlemen. We have with us, as I mentioned, John Kirshner, who I read... John Kirshner went to Yale, which not many of us do, although I paid tuition at Yale, but didn't attend. But John majored in biology and graduated with high honors. John, am I correct in surmising that you might have been on the pre-med track at Yale? Is that possible?
I was for a few years. That is correct. And then I took David Swensen's class, who the late David Swensen ran the endowment at Yale.
Yeah.
And you may have run into him. And he was the gentleman that changed my mind.
Yeah.
Go into finance.
Changed your net worth, certainly. So medicine's loss is structured finance's gain. And John is a most active fellow at Janus Henderson. If I read the website correctly, you are the supervising intelligence over no fewer than 5 funds, all of which the theme is financial architecture, right? There's an exchange-traded fund. There are exchange-traded funds that deal with collateralized debt obligations of various credit stripes. And so John, let's begin, if we may. I dare say the readers of Grants, as well as the listeners to Current Yield, want to know what a CLO is and what it might pay the patient investor and what other risks attach to it.
Yeah, those are all good questions. Thanks. So a CLO stands for a collateralized loan obligation. And so it's a mouthful. We understand it's an acronym, which we tend to have a lot of in our world of securitized products, but it's no different than any other securitization. So if you think about other products that maybe your listeners or readers are more familiar with, things like mortgages, auto loans, credit card loans, student loans, et cetera. The reason why securitization is important and exists, it's because it allows these types of loans to be packaged and then sold to investors. So if you think about it, if I wanted to invest in a mortgage-backed security or a mortgage and there wasn't securitization, I'd have to go underwrite every individual borrower out there, which would be wildly inefficient and probably somewhat impossible to do. But by taking a whole pool of mortgages or auto loans or credit card loans, you can do it in that the fact that the loans underneath are somewhat standardized. Right. And then it becomes a statistical exercise. So for CLOs, it's actually corporate debt, not consumer debt. So these are leveraged loans or bank loans, two different words for the same thing, that are made to companies that for whatever reason don't want to or can't let or borrow in the high yield bond market. Right. So they come to the bank loan market and they get their loans. And then CLO managers take a portfolio of these loans, 200 or 300 loans, they put it in a securitization, and then that securitization divides up the risk into different layers, right, also called tranches, and that those go from anywhere from AAA all the way down to single B sometimes.
Okay. Yes, let me stop there for 1 second, if I may, John, to ask you this. This is where I think we could use a word of explanation on a kind of alchemy. Sure. That happens with the securitization process. For example, if you were to take one representative loan randomly selected from, say, the AAA rated Janus Henderson CLO ETF, that yes. loan would as likely as not, would not be AAA individually, right? It would be more correct. Likely speculative grade. Is this okay so far?
So far, so good.
Okay. However, and this is where the a little bit of the mathematical art comes in. If you were to take not one speculative grade loan, but dozens, hundreds, thousands, and arrange them such that the order of loss or the order of payment was concentrated in certain portions of that structure, you could introduce a new way of looking at risk, right? You could structure such things so that the holders of a certain group of these loans would in effect be holding something resembling a corporate AAA credit, or indeed not so far as the market judges these things from a treasury security itself. Now, how does that happen?
Yeah, there's really two things going on, Jim. So first of all, you're right. The diversification allows this. And what's going on there? Let's just say you have a portfolio of 300 loans. And you know that not every one of those is going to default. In fact, we have decades of experience as to what these corporate loans, how they react in different types of environments. A normal environment, which is kind of what we're in right now, about 3% of the loans will default. They got as high during the global financial crisis in 2008 and 2009 of about 14%. So, and the very low end might be like 1 or 2%. So we know based on past experience what the normal default rate is.
Right.
And then you have to add on a loss given default, because these are senior secured loans. They have collateral backing them. If they default, the investor doesn't get 0 cents on the dollar. Normally, it's somewhere between 50 to 70 cents on the dollar. That number has been going down. But so you know about what percent are going to default in different circumstances, and you know your recovery value given default, and then you can divide those cash flows right. coming from the loans, even in very stressed scenarios, and say the top half of the cash flows go to the AAA security, and it's very, very difficult to get a default in that AAA security. In fact, a AAA CLO has never defaulted.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are now going to refer to a graph showing the experience of the CLOs during the great global financial crisis of 2007 to 9. Now, James, will you hold that up to the microphone so the listeners can see it?
Of course.
Okay. Now, let me see that thing. So I'm going to do my best to describe what is truly a remarkable episode in finance, period. John, I think that you have a copy of this as well. And the headline is the U.S. CLO debt tranche price movements. And it begins in January 2008. And it tracks these collateralized loan obligations of various ratings, going from BB, which is kind of the penthouse of junk or speculative grade, through BBB, which is the lower end of investment grade, all the way up to AAA. And it shows the perturbations in price. And what is astounding about this to the naked eye, and indeed to the uninformed intelligence, is that these things, some of them went from about 60, 70, or 80, you know, respectable prices, all the way down to just about zero. And then they, all of them, double B, triple B, A, double A, met in the year 2013 at about 90 cents, 95 cents, or par. So this is an extraordinary round trip, and it all came out in the end. So John Kirshner, does history repeat? Is the past experience prologue, or put another way, does do previous results guarantee a future outcome?
Well, you know, I guess if you can forecast whether we'll go through another global financial crisis, that will affect my answer for sure. Obviously, it was a very special time in finance where we saw, you know, not just a few banks go under, but many banks go under, and it was global. So whenever you have a crisis like this, several things are going on. One is just fear, right? No one knew how this was going to play out and how long it was going to take. As it turned out, it took a few years for sure, but there were people speculating that it would be another depression that would take 10 or 20 years. And if that's the case, and you have defaults in leveraged loans of 10, 14, 15%, yeah, then probably the double B or even triple B tranche may have been worthless. As it turned out, like I said, the worst default in 2008 for an annualized period was 14% and then went down very quickly. So when you have a huge massive dislocation like that, people get scared and they start to extrapolate worst case scenarios. And then they tend to sell things that maybe haven't been around as long or haven't been proven. And the CLO market was a very different animal back then. Currently, it's $1 trillion in the U.S. and another $250 billion over in Europe. Back then, it was about a fifth the size as it is now with a lot less track record. So what you're seeing here is an extrapolation of a worst-case scenario for many years added on to just massive fear of what could happen if that continued.
John, we don't have a financial crisis now, or at least one of a global nature, but we do have kind of a tempest in a teapot over in Europe. In Europe, there's a junk borrower named Altice. It's a telecom company. It borrowed a lot to actually expand its operations over the last decade, and now it's kind of teetering on the edge of triple C. A lot of CLOs have a limit on how much triple C debt they can hold, and if they trip that limit, they either have to sell assets, often at fire sale prices, or they have to divert cash flows to the higher tranches within the CLO. Because Altice is such a big debtor, and is so widely held by so many European CLOs, there's worries that this could actually lead to a lot of CLOs either diverting cash flows or, you know, having to sell assets to satisfy that bucket. So the question we have is, has the growth in the size and the deterioration in the quality of credit begun to impact the structure of CLOs, which, again, sailed through the global financial crisis with flying colors, even if it didn't feel that way at the time?
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, right as I walked into this interview, it was downgraded to triple C. So that has actually happened. A couple of things. One, our ETFs have less than 50 basis points or 0.5% exposure to the name. So very, very small exposure. And why is that? It's because when you think about it, every CLO own somewhere around 200 to 300 different leveraged loans. And then our JAAA owns 300 different CLOs within that. So by design, investors have massive diversification so that they're never exposed to any one name to a high degree. Even a name as big as this, Altice. Like you mentioned, it's in a lot of CLOs. That is correct, but not in huge weights. Secondly, CLO managers, even if they didn't see this coming, these are not static structures. So CLO managers can sell names that have difficulties or end up defaulting. And obviously they don't want to do that. But the structure of a CLO prevents more than 7.5% in triple C names. And so when a name like this does get downgraded, usually the CLO manager will go ahead and sell that name and take the hit. But because of the structure of CLOs, particularly at the AAA level, but even at the BBB or BB level, you're very safe and protected from even large defaults like this, or when I say large, I mean from a big name. Because like I mentioned, normally you're going to have 3 or 4% of defaults in a year, and this is just, you know, one of those defaults. So diversification, and then goes to the fact that CLOs are not static structures. They're actually actively managed by very competent CLO managers that will mitigate the risk of any large default like LTs.
John, could you explain the par subordination and how the different tranches are structured for a CLO, and how that this sort of collateral test and interest coverage test that can divert income up to those AAA security holders?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's getting into the weeds a little bit. But what investors like to talk about in most securitized products is how much credit enhancement, sometimes called par subordination, basically how much support you have underneath the particular tranche that you own. So for a AAA tranche in CLOs, normally you have 30 to 40% of support beneath you. So if you think about it, and let's just assume a stress case, if there is a default, you're getting back 50 cents on the dollar. A full 70% to 80% of the loans would have to default for that AAA CLO to take a write down. So let's just say 80% default, you're getting 50 cents on the dollar back as recovery value. That means you're losing 40%. That's what some AAA CLOs have as par subordination beneath you. That is a very incredibly unlikely scenario. If that happened, basically, unless you own ammunition and gold and guns, you're going to be in a much worse circumstance with equities or other bonds. So
you're talking to an audience that actually does own some gold.
Yeah. And I do myself.
We're possession, John.
So, and you mentioned things like the interest coverage test. That's just make sure that the cash flows from the leveraged loans are high enough to cover the interest charge on the CLO bonds. WARF is a weighted average rating factor. That's, you know, basically calculated on the ratings of the underlying loans. Requirements as far as how many second liens the deal can own, how many triple C's they can own. Yeah. So again, not to get too much in the weeds, but there are all these protections in place so that the CLO manager just can't go out and junk up the portfolio in order to juice their returns, because usually CLO managers own the bottom slice or equity tranche at the expense of the CLO bondholders.
John, does that help? Very good. John, Janice Henderson is leading the league in AUM of the AAA rated CLO exchange traded fund, which you oversee. And I have a question for you about the other fund. So if my numbers are more or less correct, the JAAA, the Janice Henderson AAA rated CLO ETF, has about $4 billion under management. And there's another one, which is a Janice Henderson B to triple B CLO, so it's a lower credit rating, presumably a higher yield, and that has about 100 million or a little bit more under management. So 4 billion versus 100 billion, that tells me that your clientele are kind of risk averse. They look for some good income, but they are not willing to go crazy over it. Now, the question I have for you is, what does the Janus AAA rated ETF pay these days in the way of a floating rate dividend to its investors? And in contrast, what does the Janus Henderson BBB variation pay? The one that's a little bit riskier by credit grade, but presumably also rather higher yielding. What's the difference in those two yields?
Yeah. Before I give you those numbers, let me just correct your AUM numbers, because they're woefully out of date. JAAA is now $7.4 billion, And JBBB is almost 400 million.
You had a good weekend.
we did. JBBB has taken in over 150 million so far this month. So you're correct that the size of JBBB is much higher, but actually we're getting not quite as much inflows into JBBB as JAAA, but much higher. So to answer your question, JAAA is about 6.25 right now. Uh-huh. So that is the monthly distribution yield of what you get every month, and then you annualize that. JBBB is about 7.75% right now. So, and why is that? You know, you might say, well, you know, you're only getting about 150 basis points more going from AAA to BBB, and that's because short end rates are so high right now, right? So it's more of a short term interest rate play as the Fed has raised rates than a overall credit play right now. So that credit spread has tightened as the economy has done well, and eventually when the Fed starts cutting rates, these yields will go down and there'll be a wider spread between JAAA and JBBB, but that's what investors are getting right now.
Okay.
John, can I ask you about the leveraged loan market?
Yeah, sure.
I know that leveraged loan defaults, as you said right now, are kind of in a normal range, but they're rising. We're also seeing an increased use of distressed debt exchanges where borrowers try to get their lenders to agree to a lower loan amount to be repaid back. At the same time, we're also seeing extreme competition between the bank syndicated loan market, where banks are easing terms, offering lower spreads, and the private credit market. I'd love to know, how do you square this and what do you see going on?
Yeah, so it's very interesting because obviously it's been a little bit of a difficult time in the leveraged loan market the last couple of years as the Fed was raising rates and a lot of investors expected a recession globally, actually, and which hasn't really come to pass in the U.S. Growth has been relatively strong. And what happens is, and for people who don't know, the private credit market is a market where instead of a bank like, you know, take your big Wall Street bank coming to, you know, a whole swath of investors and saying, we have this leveraged loan, here's what we think price talk is, investors put in their orders, it's called broadly syndicated. So it's one bank or sometimes several banks, but many investors going in for a particular loan. Private credit, it's usually one bank and one lender, or maybe two lenders. And it's much less transparency and much less liquidity actually in the loan. So why? But because those loans exist, there are CLOs that are formed off of private credit loans. Why we don't like that market is simply because of the lack of transparency. You don't get to see through on the deals, what the loans are. You don't really know what the covenants are behind the loans. You don't know what the protection is. Doesn't mean they're bad loans. It's just less transparency and less liquidity. So, but what has happened actually over the last few, so last year was the first year where private credit really came to the fore. What I mean by that is normally private credit is about 5 to 10% of the loan market. Last year, it was about 20 to 25%. So much, much more issuance in that market. But what we've seen so far this year is because the credit markets have opened up more simply because the Fed is getting close to, or Fed is, for all intents and purposes, done, getting close to easing. Doesn't look like the U.S. is going in a recession. Is this year the public market or the broadly syndicated loan market has taken back market share and refinanced a lot of deals. So I think there will be this push and pull between the two markets when it's more benign credit type environment. I think the broadly syndicated loan market will take market share. When it's maybe a little iffier, you're going to see private credit take some market share. But right now, private credit is here to stay. And there's a reason for that. There are higher fees. There are the spreads on the CLOs from private credit are wider. But that being said, it's still much, much smaller than the broadly syndicated loan market. And we think the broadly syndicated loan market is more appropriate for investment vehicles like our CLO ETFs.
John, what do you tell, a financial advisor who wants to know what the advantage might be in investing in a CLO or an exchange-traded fund that manages CLOs as opposed to ordinary corporate bond funds, for example, or ordinary tax-exempt municipal securities? What's the edge or the advantage? Certainly, what a differentiating factor is that your CLOs are floating rate, but what else goes into the investment decision?
Yeah, it's funny, Jim, because that was going to be my first answer was it's floating rate. And so what people don't understand necessarily is that a lot of fixed income globally is floating rate, but very little is in the U.S. It's, you know, it's you buy a bond, you get your interest payments and securitized every month in treasuries or corporates 2 times a year, and then you get your principal back at the end. But whatever coupon you sign up for when that bond is issued, that's the coupon of interest you get throughout the life of the bond. In CLOs, that floats with something called the SOFR rate, secured overnight funding rate. It used to be LIBOR, but LIBOR has gone away. So now
it disgraced itself.
It did. It was time for it to go, and it died. And now we have a new short-term rate called SOFR. And so what that means is when the Fed is raising rates, right, like it has been the last couple of years, your coupon goes up. Every time the Fed raised rates, the coupon would go up. Likewise, if the Fed starts cutting rates, your coupon will go down. But the nice thing is that most people, if they own fixed income, have fixed rate bonds. Almost all corporate bonds are fixed rate, same with municipal bonds. So to have that diversification of a floating rate security, particularly if you have something that's relatively short term as far as your horizon, that's very, very advantageous. I'd say secondly, again, is you can choose your own risk reward. If you want the highest quality, the AAA, yes, you're going to get a little less interest, but you are very much sleep at night, you know, very safe. If you want a little more risk, or you weather a little more risk, you're going to get a higher yield, and you can go ahead and buy a BBB CLO like ours. In corporate bonds, if you like a particular name, you are beholden to whatever the rating is of that particular name. And it may go up or it may go down, but it's very, very difficult to just go out there and buy very high credit quality security. I think there are two corporate bonds that are still AAA, Johnson & Johnson. I think there's one other one, but there's very, very little corporate debt that's AA or AAA. And then in the single A space, it's mostly financials. So the corporate bond investment grade index is mostly BBBs. And so this gives investors the opportunity of getting floating rate, but also getting very high credit quality if that's what they want.
Yeah. Credit quality through the alchemical processes of securitization. It takes a little while to wrap your mind around the idea that the securities underlying the structure are themselves speculative grade, but as organized and as structured, actually, that becomes, for some holders in that structure, a AAA thing. It's kind of neat, right?
It does. Yeah. And Jim, can I make a point here? Because we often get this question, and I want to be very clear. People that have been around long enough, and probably a lot of your readers and listeners have been, they hearken back to the GFC and say, CLO sounds a lot like a CDO. And if I remember correctly, CDOs also had AAA securities that did not perform very well. And a lot of them defaulted. And that is very true. And why is that? Because CDOs were principally made up of BBB subprime mortgages, which were obviously not underwritten correctly. They should have never existed. There were mortgages made to people that didn't have the financial wherewithal to take out a mortgage, and there was fraud. And so what happened is when the housing market crashed, and no one thought it was going to.
That's not quite correct, John.
Okay, that's not quite good. All right.
I'm just defending the brand of Grant's Interest Rate Observer. Please proceed. Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So the last time we had seen that type of movement in house prices was the Great Depression of the 1920s and 30s. So very few models were modeling that in. And when it actually happened, these triple B subprime mortgages got written down to zero. So everything that was created for them, including AAA CDOs, did not perform well. It's very different with leverage loans.
Let me add one of the asset classes that you have prohibited yourselves from owning is the commercial real estate CLO, which ought to come as a little bit of a relief to some listeners who have been keeping up with the news in that department.
So, correct.
So John Kirshner, thank you for being with us. I should have said John Kirshner, CFA. So,
thank you.
Charlie Grant earned that thing, and Evan Lorenz owns that that credential as well, and James Robertson Jr. is hard at work on achieving it too. So you should not omit that. So thanks for being with us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And until the next time, thank you on behalf of Current Yield, Grant's Interest Rate Observer of the Air.